know what would be a good idea would be to start the podcast by saying what it is, who's on it, and what it's about.
Hey, what? Crazy.
That's interesting.
I've been doing this for like 8 years. Let's see if I'm finally good at it.
Yeah.
I don't know. All right.
Oh, this seems stupid.
It's giving me anxiety. I don't know.
My stomach!
I'm sorry, I have a profound like status anxiety, so I don't want to sort of like impose by telling you what the podcast is called or what it's about or who's on it.
Uh-huh. Hey, what do you want it to be about? How can I... Hey, whatever you want, it'll be about that.
Hey, Oomphy, it's No Gods, No Mares. Did we do something wrong? Is everything okay? Because, like, I just, you know, I obviously you didn't say anything, but, you know, I was worried, so I just wanted to check in and make sure that we didn't say or do anything that made you feel sort of bad in any way.
Hey, where are you going? Come back, like, please. We can change what the podcast is about if you want it to be about something that isn't about mares. Just come back, please.
It's about ethics in video game journalism.
That's right. Oh, I just got my early birthday present from my wife, and it is a synthesizer, so I will be talking about that only for the next hour and a half.
Oh,
please.
Maddie, can I ask what synth you got?
It's a Micro Korg.
Yes.
I'm excited to learn on it because I don't know shit about synths, and I haven't learned a new instrument in like 20 years.
Is it
No Gods, No Mares? It's about how weird mares are. It's me, November Kelly. It's Riley.
I'm the mayor of this episode.
You are the mayor of this episode. Well, the thing is, I'm your press secretary. And please, Madam Mayor, please go ahead and take over the episode and introduce our guest.
Thank you, press secretary November. Yes, there were some hecklers, of course, appeared to do a traditional protest of the mayoral address, which is to sidetrack it about synthesizers.
I hate when Kamala goes to stuff and gets heckled by people loudly talking about their new synthesizers.
Boo!
Korg! No, it's No Gods, No Mares. We're here today talking about Ken Sim. Now, you may think, hey, Riley, I thought you said you were going to do the second
guest.
I'm going in a moment. I have to address
this
first.
It's fine. I don't matter.
I thought you'll say, hey.
I'm shit. I'm a dog.
Normally I'm having a great time with my friends, but there's just also, I keep hearing this like noise on the call. I don't know what that's about.
Who can say what it is? Probably a synthesizer. It's a howling. It's a plaintive howling. No, you thought I was going to do episode 2 of the Miami trilogy, Joe Carollo. And the Mayor Taculus, however, said, hey, Riley, your friend and ours, Dan Beckner, is available to guest on the show next Friday. So why don't you do a Vancouver mayor to take advantage of his knowledge of sociopathic BC liberal boomers. So Dan, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hi. Hello. And thank you for ignoring me at first, like we talked about before.
Of course.
Riley and I actually talked about this before, and he was like, I'm going to introduce you normally. And I was like, oh, but what if?
And I'm just
throwing this out there. What if you like ignored me? Like just as a joke, you know?
Oh, that'd be so, I'd hate that.
All right, perfect. Now we've managed that. Now we can get back to talking about this Micro Korg shit.
Yes.
Okay.
Is it the Micro Korg 2 or is it the original Micro Korg?
It's the newer one. It's got the
sampling technology, right?
Hold on.
Get the Ryan police. This protest has gotten out of hand.
Micro Korg.
How do you find the OLED, the OLED screen on it? Because I've heard a lot of different I've heard a lot of different things about it. Some
it
people
seems
like
fine.
It.
I got it literally yesterday and I've just been goofing around with it. I know next to nothing about synthesizers. Like I know how to play the piano a little bit, so that's why I wanted to get into it. So I actually don't, I can't tell you any hard opinions on the thing yet. I'm very pleased with the beeps and boops so far. I've gotten to play with it for like 20 minutes.
So I'm going to say, what if we do a sequel to this episode that's called How's the Korg?
Yeah, I think what I can do, I realize my mixer is a second line in, and maybe next time I'll just plug the Korg into my mixer and you'll listen to me play it while we record.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
No, what if we have live music and it's just me sampling the horrible things noodling. That we say?
Okay, so here's the thing. Dan.
Yes.
You've lived in many places.
Yes.
And one of those places has included British Columbia.
Yeah.
Where you grew up in Cowichan Lake, but you've also lived in a variety of houses.
Lydia Tarr-ass interview question.
In various states of repair.
She's got the whole biography in there, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And you have become very familiar with British Columbian boomers as a specific subgroup of person.
Yeah. I can really quickly explain before we move forward what, you know, the contours of British Columbia boomer. And basically what you have to imagine is it's 1974. You're a guy. You pay the equivalent of $150,000 in today's money, which is about 50 some odd thousand dollars, and you get a house. And then you do nothing. And then you wake up in the year 2021 and your house is worth $2.5 million. But you're still a hoser. But you feel like you're part of the upper class. So there's an internal sort of war going on between your inherent hoserness and your feeling of achievement, which you've done nothing for. So
now, just to explain something for me for the record, and I remind you, you are under oath. Could you explain this concept of hoserness to me?
Hoserness, November. Have you seen Trailer Park Boys?
Only little clips on Twitter.
Okay. I think Trailer Park Boys is the greatest sort of ethnographic study of hoserdom in Canada. But hoser is like, you know, just like a well-meaning oaf.
Mm. This explains Riley's sort of passion for the oath.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
They're oaths. Modern oaths.
And so basically, municipal politics in British Columbia, especially Vancouver Island, has become this strange thing where it has all of the elements of San Francisco, like NIMBYism and sort of paranoias about the homeless. But they also never ditched the hippiness that San Francisco did ditch to do that. So it's like they're Gary Tan, but wearing a tie-dye shirt and, you know, doing heroin. God. Yeah.
You know what this is? You know this combination of like kind of hippiness, social like weirdness and sort of like deep boomer conservatism is? You know where else I recognize this? This is Austin, Texas.
Amen. That's right. Austin, Texas definitely has these contours. And it's like Riley said, it's like hippiness inherent boomer conservatism. Like these are people who did a negative growth from, you know, they didn't just do a no growth, they did a reverse growth. And one more flavor, which is like, you know, you've got a hippie conservative who's also very worried about Chinese 5G towers beaming CCP propaganda into their brains.
There's bits of this in like Oakland as well, as I understand it, that got like priced out of SF. Like the guy who like owned the warehouse where the ghost ship fire was one of these guys, basically.
Correct.
Right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Okay, we're locked in on a type of guy that I know well and hate and have hated for a long time. Okay.
So basically, that's reflected in the municipal politics up and down the province, because people are like, no, you need to like reflect my strange paranoias that like homeless people are going to attack me like Night of the Living Dead, even though I live in Cowichan Lake.
Yes.
Two, you need to make sure no one ever builds anything. And three, also the people who think that are getting elected to these positions. It's like, I'll give an example. In late 1990s, Bob Cross was mayor of Victoria, which is the main city on Vancouver Island. And he created this law where if you're ever found with any drug at all, you must stay out of downtown Victoria forever. So this one, like, so a guy would be caught with marijuana. Yeah. And then like, they'd be like, okay, well, we caught you with marijuana, which is illegal, you know, at this point. And then they'd be like, okay, so you can never enter Victoria again.
You've been banished. You've been exiled. You know, we brought back ancient Greek ostracism.
Exactly. It's like, medieval shunning. And, you know, they called it red zoning. The problem with it was, among it, among other things, besides the fact that it's like, you know, anti-civil rights, is that all the services are downtown. There is nothing in the periphery of Victoria in the late 1990s. So you really, like, if you had any kind of mental health issues or you needed to check in with the social worker, even if you had to check in with a parole officer, if you were red zone, you couldn't do any of that stuff.
Jesus. That's like outlawry. You're just condemned to like live in a sea cave until you die, you know, someone hunts you.
Yeah.
And this was when, like, I assume no later than the sort of like 1790s, right?
No, this November. This was this would have been 1993 through 1999.
Oh, okay, sure.
Repealed in 2002, I think.
To be fair, that kind of period of like sort of late grunge probably would go pretty well in a sea cave in Vancouver Island. But like, aside from that, horrible.
Yeah.
But I also want to talk about another specific mayor before we get to Ken Sim, our main event, which is the Penticton, British Columbia mayor, John Vasilakis.
Oh, I fucking love this guy.
Town with a name that sounds like some kind of like joint disorder.
Wait, that was the name of the town? That was the town?
Yeah, Penticton.
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 Yeah. Ah, Doc, you got to help me. The Penticton's really bad this month, you know?
I got a flare up.
Either that or it's the drug you take for the joint disorder. It is. Like, oh, my grandma's on Penticton for her arthritis.
There are so many grandmas who are on Penticton and being driven crazy by it, like just by living there. John Vasilakis has been ordered to pay $14,000 in damages. This is from CBC. Before being found liable for the battery of his brother Nicholas during a family confrontation in June 2020, Nicholas Vasilakis, who spells his surname differently than John because they hate each other, was suing his brother for $35,000 in damages for assault. The decision describes how a protracted disagreement over jewels and coins belonging to their ailing mother.
My mother's jewels and coins.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you mean the Penticton rubies?
In a daring heist, these two Greek men stole the Penticton rubies. So John, 76, was sitting mayor on June 14th, 2020, when he left a profanity-laced voicemail on his sister Athena Demostin's phone, threatening her and Nicholas, 76 at the time, with death.
Two 76-year-old men, which would kind of imply twins, no?
Greek men.
Two 76-year-old Greek twins in a fist fight over God only knows what in the way of jewels and treasures.
I'm looking at a map of where Penticton is, and it's like spanning two lakes. Like, it's just a weird little strip of land across a big body of water. So this is very dramatic in my mind. They're like sparring at midnight and it's raining and they're on a bridge. And one of them is a bag of jewels and one of them is a bag of coins.
They're firing cannons at each other from speed from shitty speedboats.
And the thing is, the knowledge that's accumulated in Canada, of Canada in my head, is such that it's causing me profound psychic damage to know that of these two 76-year-old Greek-Canadian men, I could break up that fight by going, hey, remember Mr. Dress-Up?
it's time for the tickle trunk, boys. And by that moment, they've both hopped into their triremes on separate lakes and gone in opposite directions.
This town ain't big enough for the two of us.
That's right.
They're the last Greek-Canadian samurai dueling on the bridge.
I loved that movie. Tom Cruise's accent in it, diabolical. Yeah.
So the message was not listened to until after the fist fight took place. After leaving the message, John went to Demostin's home where he pushed him into where he shoved Athena Demostin into a kitchen countertop and shoved Nicholas onto a couch.
Okay, sorry, that's slightly funnier. Yeah.
When Demostin intervened, the situation de-escalated, and John left the house, but not before saying to his elderly mother, who was lying on the couch, Greek words that translate as roughly the following: may you not die until I step on your chest 40 times.
Just a couple of things here. The construction here, the passive voice of like Greek words that translated to, or the voicemail was not listened to until after the fight had started. This is weirdly Alice Munro.
Yeah.
Actually, there's a little bit like, I know I'm just welding Canadian stuff together in my head, but like, that's very lyrical, you know, like there's something there, I think. Just the authors that you put in Canada to write Canlit are instead writing local news articles about Greek men fighting each other and cursing their mothers.
So what I think is really funny is that this is also like the culmination of many other legal battles between the brothers.
Years and years of legal battles, a lot of which center around something called the Wine Cellar Bar and Grill. which
delightful.
So like many boomer conflicts in British Columbia, this started as a property dispute over rent, because there's the bar and then there's a rental income property with like four units above.
Yeah, so in her decision, Hardwick noted that it was significant to the claim of physical harm that Nicholas did not seek medical attention and only took a Tylenol in the aftermath. She also noted that Nicholas commenced the legal action 15 months after the incident. And only after John filed a lawsuit in 2021 that named Nicholas and two nephews.
Getting extremely delayed onset shoved onto couch syndrome symptoms.
He's just like walking in an airport or whatever and just stumbles onto a chair.
Here's the thing. Here's a little personal injury tip for you, the listener, from me, a real lawyer. Brackets, no, I'm not. When something happens to you and someone like assaults you, you just keep that in your back pocket until the next time you feel bad, whenever that is. Could be 2 minutes, could be 20 years. And then you go, this is a direct result of your conduct in, I don't know, lightly brushing past my arm or something. And you take them to the fucking cleaners.
Amen.
So basically what happened
is
John...
That's the Penticton way.
The Penticton way is to store it up.
They send one of yours to the couch, you send one of theirs to the kitchen cabinet.
It's like the code Duello, but code Penticton.
That's fun. Okay, so basically, the personal injury lawsuit was only filed after John filed a lawsuit that named Nicholas and two nephews as defendants in a battle over the rental income of this jointly owned property next to the cellar wine bar. The action was never heard because John successfully filed to discontinue the claim 1 week before it went to trial. John Vasiliki was mayor of Penticton for 4 years.
Incredible.
There's a little backstory, just like a little extra color for John's tenure as mayor. So, you know, he owns this rental property downtown. He owns Penticton's Penticton's fanciest wine bar where you can get a cheesecake that's sitting on top of another cheesecake, you know?
Oh, that seems like a beautiful place to celebrate like a 20th wedding anniversary where I'm deeply unhappy.
Question, is there anything between the cheesecakes? Or are they just stacked atop each other?
Cheesecakes are touching each other, which makes it beautiful. Wow. Delicious.
I'm now opening. Welcome to the wine cellar, to the cellar wine bar and kitchen Penticton.
Permanently closed.
Oh. Interesting. Yeah. Oh, it looks terrible. It's very contemporary modern in a way that makes me feel depressed.
Yes. Yeah. It's super depressing. So you know, during his tenure as mayor,
plate makes me want to shoot myself through the roof of the mouth. Wait. On the bottom of this website, there is in a cursive font, experience the difference, but experience is misspelled, so it says experience the difference.
No, it's about the credit rating agency.
I believe Experian would be a beautiful name for a girl.
Experian the difference. So he's a big mayor. He's the mayor. He's a big downtown business owner and a landlord. And
I'm so sorry to keep interrupting.
Oh, go ahead.
I just need all of you and the listener to go into their internet web browsers of some kind and put in thecellarwinebarkitchen.com/desserts.
Oh, I'm there. I'm already looking at that cake, baby. It looks bad.
What a JPEG. What a beautiful JPEG.
It's like, this is the best photo you could get of this cheesecake slice. And the whipped cream is like melted.
And it's the only thing on there.
It looks like somebody coughed a raspberry onto it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Awful. It's
fantastic.
Look, what did you want them to do? Try again?
Their dessert menu has their logo, which is a wine glass that looks like it's shattering and melting from someone coming in.
That's
it too hard.
That's because you're throwing it at your brother.
Okay. They do serve at Malopata, which is cool, though. That's cool. As someone who lives in a great neighborhood, that's a delicious apple cake.
Yeah. I support all the people wanting to serve great desserts. Absolutely.
But oh, man, this is not good to look at with my eyes.
It's really bad. Like it. Why is the mint that's in the whipped cream been sugared?
That's Greek
style.
Or is
that mold? It's great. Sure. Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, the cellar is being redeveloped into the White Raven Pub.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
With new owners and past staff staying on.
All right.
Yeah.
So, like, one big thing that happened when John was mayor was that Penticton got into a battle with the province of British Columbia over this. The people of Penticton wanted to close a homeless shelter because Penticton, not unlike everywhere else in British Columbia, is dealing with housing bubble and a lack of services. So you've got a lot of unhoused people and there are not a lot of jobs left. So the city was under John's guidance was basically like, you know what? Fuck the province. We are voting to close down the homeless shelter in the middle of winter.
Jesus.
Yeah.
In Canada. Cool.
In Canada, in the middle of BC, which is very cold. So the province basically had to discipline the town and they got in this huge battle. And at one point, there was a news report about a, quote, bucket of dog feces that was thrown at the homeless shelter. And John Jesus. Was one of the people who was investigated. So.
Oh, my Lord.
Again, he is such a perfect BC boomer.
Being the cop who gets put on the bucket of dog feces investigation, you know, like, and the thing is, we've seen multiple Canadian cops be detailed to mayor investigation task forces before. This is somehow not the only one, but it is one of the worst ones.
Yeah. I mean, it is very funny to be the like the sort of dog shit Serpico, and you realize it goes all the way to the top in Penticton.
I'm not photoshopping the hat for dog shit Serpico.
Yeah, so and also John Vasilaki, like, he seems to hate Penticton as well, because he was interviewed in an Okanagan Valley newspaper being like, and saying, I believe Penticton's best days have passed long ago.
Yeah. All these fucking assholes are like this. All of them. All of these crusty boomers that get elected to positions of power. There's kind of an Eddington thing going on with them where they're like, they don't want to govern. They hate the government, but they need to be in power, you know? Like, and then when they get there, they don't know what to do. Well, I mean, besides assaulting family members over jewels and throwing dog shit at a homeless shelter.
And coins.
Allegedly. Mm.
Jewels and coins, allegedly.
Yeah. Real Please. Kind of like pirate treasure hours, yes. Yeah.
So he claims that everything went bad for Penticton in the whole Okanagan Valley, which is Canada's other worst wine country.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. I didn't realize we were going to be getting into like winology beefs here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it is definitely worse.
It's no Niagara Escarpment is what you're saying.
It's not. Okay. It's the Niagara Escarpment's definitely better than the Okanagan Valley, and I will die on that hill.
I thought it was a valley or an escarpment.
God damn it.
God damn it.
Weird escarpment to die on.
It doesn't matter. It's the terroir.
That's new Twitter bio, going begging. Weird escarpment to die on.
They clearly hate the place they live, but are very paranoid about it being ruined by the wrong kinds of people.
Settler colonialism.txt.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
So keep that in mind when we talk about Ken Sim. So Ken Sim is our main mayor for the day. Although John Vasilakis, what a beautiful mayor.
A little subsidiary mayor in lieu of a mayor all around.
A little a mayor's boosh.
Yeah.
I think that was the municipal roundup. So can we just get some belated municipal roundup music?
Yeah.
Manny, plug in that micro cord.
it's all the way over there. I don't know where the cords are.
Sam, could you please play the municipal roundup theme music, but backwards? So you know that it's facing.
Don't make him do that. It's going to sound awful.
What if it sounds funny?
Okay, sure. But I'm willing to find out at the listener's expense.
Yeah.
By the way, I need these people to keep paying me forever.
We're talking about Ken Sim. Yeah. Ken Sim is the currently sitting mayor of Vancouver.
Ooh. Is this the first time we've done a currently in-mayored mayor?
We've done Eric Adams a couple of times,
of course,
but we've mostly avoided it as a going concern.
Yeah, the story of Ken Sim is not finished yet. You know,
That's right.
The future is unwritten for young Ken.
Yeah, his sash is not yet complete.
he's still feeling the rain on his skin.
So Ken Sim is an odd character. He's the current mayor of Vancouver. He has been since 2022, and he's very much one of these I am not a politician mayors.
Yeah.
He's a businessman, and he's finally figured out a way to make government better, which is to govern without ideology and instead to run the city like a business. We've never heard of that before.
Oh. Yeah, I see here on his Wikipedia page that he represents a municipal political party, which is just a better city Vancouver, which I love a municipal issue party. I actually don't. They're all terrible.
ABCV, baby.
So all of the major political parties in Vancouver are exclusively municipal?
Okay, perfect. Okay, incredible. Sure. All politics should be like this.
Because Vancouver is a fucked up place that's full of this kind of person, like the John Vasilakis person and the people who appeal to people who are trying to appeal to him. Because Vancouver is like, it's a city that's impossible to live in because there are very few jobs and everything costs $1 trillion.
Yeah.
Basically.
My experience of Vancouver when I was there a couple of years ago was just like mostly gigantic empty glass buildings with illegal Airbnbs in them and restaurants and nothing else.
Correct.
It was kind of insane.
Isn't a bunch of it made out of like engineered wood that's going to burn down in a few years as well?
Maybe.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I had not heard that, but that wouldn't be surprising. I mean, the first wave of condominiums that they built after Expo 86 was like the turning point for Vancouver. That was Vancouver's stepping onto the world stage. And the condos that they built afterwards that started fueling the real estate bubble there, because it is, I think, the fourth most unaffordable city on the planet to live in.
Jesus.
And it was really like for Canada, the canary in the coal mine for the current like housing apocalypse. But the first condos that they built were super poor construction. And there was a, you know, like news cycle after news cycle about leaky condos, but they just kept going. So maybe they started using engineered wood. Who knows?
Yeah, I really like the idea of someone who is like a sort of Condé Nast traveler kind of person, like a business class or first class kind of like tourist, but whose only source of information on which places in the world are good is which cities are the most expensive to live in, and being like, yeah, Vancouver's the fourth classiest city in the world. Has to be.
Yeah, exactly.
So. Yeah, like my aunt and uncle live in Vancouver and they've just been living there forever.
They must be making pretty good money to do
know? They're doing the thing that Dan said, which is they just happened to own a house there back when it was normal. They're just like, they've been completely blindsided by like wealth that it's impossible to really cash in on because it's hard to actually sell the house because it's worth so much, even though it's like a completely normal fucking bungalow.
Yeah. I mean, just a small background on Vancouver, like not unlike San Francisco, it was like a port terminus on the gold rush. And it was I even remember when I was a kid, it was like a kind of a grimy, rough and tumble resource extraction community, you know, city. It had the port. And it's got some sawmills, it's got Cool Harbor. And, you know, after the real estate boom, there was kind of an attempt to paint it in a different light. It's Hollywood North, it's this, it's that. But that spirit of a town where you can go out for a drink and get stabbed by like a psychotic gold miner is still bubbling under the surface.
Yeah, I mean, other little bit echoes of the Soapy Smith episode, except they were mining silver. So the other thing is Vancouver has probably because it has such an insane housing crisis, has, I think, probably the worst, like has the largest unhoused population in Canada as a percentage of its inhabitants.
Mm.
It has a decades long sort of like opioid death epidemic.
It's almost as if making all the housing too expensive would make a bunch of people homeless.
That's crazy talk.
Okay. Easy fix. Run the city like a business.
Yeah.
Someone has to.
Yeah. Have we thought of that?
No, I actually didn't. Yeah. I should have done.
So basically this is the situation we're going into, right? Which is there's not a lot of things happening economically because things are getting so expensive. Or like there are, but not to support that level of price.
Just city kind of pricing itself to death.
Yes.
Genuinely, yes. 100%. That's how I think of Vancouver. And part of the symptoms of that is like more and more people are forced into homelessness.
It just kind of becomes like a kind of environmental fact, like gravity or air, you know, or like oxygen content in the atmosphere is like, oh yeah, to be in Vancouver costs you $3,500 a second.
Kind of.
That's actually the best description of it. It is just so expensive to live within the city limits, like, and you know, this sort of blast radius of greed stretches, you know, 100 kilometers east, it stretches to the island, it stretches south and north, you know, so.
Sick. I kind of want to see it. Like, I'm excited to go to a live show there and pay $85 for a beer, you know?
Yeah. So basically, the other thing is, Vancouver has a neighborhood called the Downtown East Side that is, like, the subject of infinite moral panics in British Columbia. And it's like, oh, if you go to the Downtown East Side, you're going to get killed 30 times by, like, a homeless drug addict, basically, is the story. And that's a story that's been told for a long time, but just keep that in your mind as sort of the context for the city, where we're going to talk about what Ken Sim came started governing in 2022, trying to run it like a business. So Sim's parents, they moved with their children from Hong Kong in 67. His dad, Francis, was a banker who spoke five languages, but none of them were English. And so when they came to Vancouver, he just bounced from job to job. They moved frequently. They didn't have a stable life. He grew up and got a business degree, which was financed by working part-time at like a Wendy's, as a janitor, and so on. He becomes an accountant, then he becomes a banker, has a kid relatively early on, and then basically says, huh, I'll never see my kids if I stay a banker. And my wife, when she was pregnant, had a lot of trouble getting home care nursing. So he founded a home care nursing company called Nurse Next Door, which made them all mega millionaires many times over, because like Nurse Next Door basically is just a profiteer from the collapse of the British Columbia provincial healthcare system.
Correct.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's a privatized social service. Gotcha. Yeah,
correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes. He privatized a social service and then became like, got like $100 million from it.
That seems like a good thing that you can do in like morally, financially, all of that, you know?
Yeah.
No downsides for anyone, I'm sure.
Yeah. So I even have in my notes here, this would be very familiar to anyone who's been looking at healthcare privatization in the UK, where like Richard Branson suddenly runs all of the mental health in Berkshire or whatever. It's the same thing. But he steps back from running it in 2011, where he stops being the day-to-day CEO and just joins the board of directors and just like makes money from it passively. In 2014, he's interviewed about his success and he says, "You don't get your identity from your title or your financial net worth. You get your identity from how people interact with you."
That's so true.
"It was a really depressing time for me. I'd been feeling empty for about 6 months."
I wonder why.
But then I received some advice from my mentor, the founder of Lululemon, Chip Wilson.
Yeah.
Oh my
God. Now.
Yeah.
Here's the
evil
thing.
Man.
Yeah.
The evil man.
The Ayn Rand guy.
Yeah.
Remember how Gavin Newsom had the Gettys?
Oh my God.
Yes. Yeah. He was kind of their Renfield.
Yeah, Ken Sim has Chip Wilson.
Oh my God.
Being the Lululemon Renfield?
Mm-hmm. I'm afraid.
Wait, being the kind of thrall to the yoga pants vampire?
Yeah, he's the Igor.
But by the way, so you know on the show I've talked before in a previous life when I was working in engineering, I ended up in the 9/11 pit alone. So another Maddie goes to a site visit as an engineer story is one time I was renovating a store in Manhattan. And it was currently a Lululemon. It was closing. It was getting turned into something else. And I went in the back to like take some measurements. And they had this fucked up wall with portraits of every single person that worked there. And it was rankings. And every day they'd like, the manager would go rank the employees that day. Just a truly, like a truly evil. And if you're not familiar, they had like Ayn Rand quotes on the fucking bags and stuff.
Were they being ranked by like how good they were doing their job or like BMI?
I don't know. But it all something. Seemed very sinister.
Doing like astronaut candidate shit for like to work in a Lululemon. I mean, also like my least favorite Lululemon fact is why is it called that? Ask Chip Wilson why it's called that.
Don't ask Chip Wilson.
Wait, does Ken Sim not take issue with that?
Possibly. Oh, I mean, you might hope so.
I think the money makes the racism pill a little easier to swallow.
I bet Renfield has some issues with how Dracula's running things.
Yeah. It's just, I wish the master would give me more flies.
I wish I got a little more PTO, master. Like I'm sure he's got some problems, but it's like, well, I work for Dracula, so yeah. There's not much to do about it.
Comes with the territory on that grand set.
I mean, I'm lucky to have this job, you know? Like, you know how many people interviewed for this?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it'd be really funny if Igor, instead of saying it's a living, said it's a dying, and then it could do like a little da-da-da-da-da-da-da-bum-bum.
Yeah, it'd be pretty funny. Where's that from? Like the Halloween episode of Mr. Dress-Up?
God damn it. Fuck off. So,
listen, if you want to teach me about another presumably less embarrassing Canadian kids TV program, I'll reference that instead, but I'm going with the one I have.
Opening the terrifying tickle trunk.
Oh man, so you guys need to do an Edison Twins episode and I'll just leave it at that.
I'm just gonna look that up real quick. What's Edison Twins?
All right. So basically, he also starts a chain of bagel shops just because he's like, I'm so bored. I'm going to start a chain of bagel shops called Rosemary Rock Salt.
Classic Vancouver bagel.
Being rich on accident, but through having done some extremely evil stuff, basically inadvertently, and then going, just kind of casting around for stuff to do, where you're in the one city, where you're the, like one of the like 10 people in the city where everything is incredibly expensive, where that doesn't mean anything to you, mm-hmm. where you're just like, you're having the like millionaire or billionaire like hit in the back of the head, sort of like cognitive impairment, where you're like, oh yeah, $85 for a beer, sure, whatever. Like, is card okay? Yeah, no wonder you're bored, you know? Like, because you don't have, all of the texture of that has just been sanded off for you. You're not thinking like, hey, a guy just charged me $15,000 to walk down the street, a thing which I assume regularly happens in Vancouver. That's not bothering you. You're just like, oh yeah, the walking fee, of course.
Yeah, of course. Well, I pay the walking fee, and then I actually own several of the walking fee collectors, so I'm up on walking fees, mostly. The other thing about Chip Wilson, though, is that he gets Ken Sim into the Landmark Forum. This is our first Landmark Forum mayor. Oh,
God.
Now, for those of you who might not know what the Landmark Forum is, it's basically something between, like, management training and Jonestown.
Sort of getting a sort of a Christmas adventurer vibe.
We need to give a little background for Landmark, because it's interesting. Landmark came out of the post-political action hippie movement in California, where basically they were confronted with the full force of the state and said, you know what? What if we looked inward? That surely will change politics if we work on ourselves. Mm-hmm. So it comes from the same sort of line of thinking as Synanon, but Landmark famously...
Oh, no.
Or like Est.
Okay.
Yeah. That's right, Matt. So like Landmark was Est. It is kind of, let's see, it's a more... corporate-friendly version of Est, where there was a big split in Est in the 1970s, and whoever started Landmark saw the writing on the wall and was like, we can take this, get rid of the screaming and pushing people into walls and breaking down their ego, and just take all the positive self-help stuff and charge corporations to do retreats. So, yeah.
I mean, to be fair, it was a reasonable question if you were a sort of executive in a company that bought into this stuff to be like, I work for Xerox. Why am I being put in a stress position? Why am I being welded into a 55-gallon oil drum?
To make you better at selling Xerox machines.
Exactly.
I guess so. You really have to really want the thing, and you're never going to be able to hear that Rudyard Kipling poem the same way ever again.
Correct.
Landmark has sometimes been described as a cult.
Yeah. The two things I know about Landmark is that, one, Lululemon is a Landmark company, and two, one time a friend of mine had to rescue his parents from going to them meetings. And what they did was, well, during the meetings, they move, you're free to leave at any time, but they do move card tables with people trying to sign you up for it in front of the door to leave.
Of course. Yeah.
Oh, so it's you can leave. It's just difficult and sort of anxiety.
Yeah, you just have to ask someone to move an entire table, but it's fine. You can leave whenever you want.
I think this is important to know about Ken Sim's mindset as we go into his tenure as mayor. But one thing that carried over from Est into Landmark is that, in one of their core tenets, is when you are looking at your own life and you were thinking about, oh, you know, like, this happened to me, which is why I'm like this, or why it's difficult for me to do that. Whose fault do you think that is, guys?
This is too weird. Just give me the old one where they like whip your balls or whatever. Like something more normal.
Put me in the drum.
It's your fault. It's everything is your fault, and you have the power to change it. And that is the transformative engine of Landmark. So, you know, if you take somebody who's already rich and you shove all that shit into their head, and they look at a homeless apocalypse in Vancouver, they're going to be like, you know what these people need? Landmark.
There is so much Landmark also that happens in everything Ken Sim can get it into, right? Like, he tries to even get it in when he becomes mayor. He tries to like smuggle elements of it into Vancouver City Hall by the back door. Like, he says he always calls employees city associates, because he wants to say, well, everyone has the power to make the city.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it's these kinds of things sneak in. But this is him talking about Landmark and how his experience at the Landmark Forum prompted him to run for mayor. So this is a long quote from the Georgia Strait, which interviewed Sim about the Landmark Forum and his relationship with Chip Wilson. So this businessman has no political experience, yet he's taken the audacious step of seeking the top job at Vancouver City Hall. This is in 2018 when he first ran. He credits his communications training through the Landmark Forum for giving him the confidence to succeed. He said, "Well, my experience at Landmark is that you have to have authentic conversations.
If you want to vote against this guy, you're going to have to get through this card table."
My experience at Landmark, you know, it's like you can vote no, but the voting no button, you have to like step on. There's a floor that's all like cute cats, and you have to step on all of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just really like the idea that Landmark is primarily a sort of like card table barricade training organization. And that's the one trick in the book.
Yeah. Look, it worked once. We just kept doubling down. So he says, "Well, my experience at Landmark is you have to have authentic conversations. You have to play big. I'm a great example of that. I could have talked myself out of running for mayor, but I didn't. When asked if he sends his employees to Landmark, Sim replied, 'If they want to, absolutely. It's covered by the company. We pay for it in addition to a bunch of other things.' He also spoke very positively about Rockefeller habits, which have been the subject of self-help books by Vern Harnish."
Oh, boy. Lord.
He loves self-help books. He's the most self-help
this
mayor.
This guy's hustling.
I mean, the sort of translation from like hippie dropout shit into self-help stuff in like the 70s and 80s is like, to me, one of the greatest untold stories in like American or I guess Canadian history.
Because they all turn into like Silicon Valley guys too, right? Like they're all hippies and like it's like these people ended up destroying society after like 1969 didn't work. It's kind of astonishing. Yeah.
I mean, none more than like people like Stuart Brand, you know, who had I believe it was like the Whole Earth catalog, you know, which was basically like you would order this thing and it'd be like, here's how to grow tomatoes and build a sauna. And then a bunch of want ads for people who were like, I need to live on a commune. and that guy was kind of the face of the privatization of the internet. You know, he was like, this is going to help us. This is going to save us. We got to do it.
It's the one, in a very real sense, the one guy who understood the direction that sort of like hippie culture was going was Charles Manson.
Exactly.
We salute you, Chuck. Yeah, sure.
But how is committing these murders making me a more effective business executive?
Well, your name's out there. People are talking about you.
Yeah. I'm exercising the power of positive thinking, and they've given me this knife. So key thing to do when you're planning a sort of horrific multiple cult murder is get that card table in early, block the exits.
That's right, block the exits, and you know you want to write pigs on the wall in blood as many times as possible, even if your arms get tired.
And then you just fold that card table back up, take it home. There's no evidence.
Visualize success.
The cops staring at the door like, how do they keep him in there?
Just leave, yeah.
it's like killing someone with an icicle that melts. It's the perfect crime. You take the card table with you.
Just like actively stabbing you and being like, listen, you can leave at any time. You're completely free to leave if you want to. But you do have to. I'm going to have to move the table, though.
You're to ask me to move the table and I'm busy right now.
Every
killing you.
Goddamn episode, there's something that just catches the one who's not, what the ones who aren't mayor. You could never guess what it's going to be.
The beauty of the card table, who could have guessed?
So we have sessions on radical candor and we bring in guest speakers at Nurse Next Door.
Sessions on radical candor is the Scientology thing about like, give us your blackmail material though, right? Yeah, like it just
absolutely.
Is.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he says, I actually want to applaud the people working at City Hall with a flawed system. It would be incredibly frustrating. I'm thankful they're sticking it out until things change and I'm in charge. Sim doesn't refer to city employees as staff. He prefers the term city team members.
Ugh.
They asked Sim if he would like the people who worked at City Hall to attend the Landmark Forum. He did not respond directly, merely saying he would love city team members to have real conversations.
And of course, the best system for having a real conversation is this one that I've been into, you know?
So yeah. I would love for our city team members to not be afraid. It sounds like there's a little bit of fear at City Hall right now.
Oh my
God. It's been politicized. City Hall's been politicized, and we've got to change that.
We've got to change that.
Someone who works at City Hall should be able to actually work there and not worry what a politician thinks and do what's right for the city. It shouldn't be based on ideology. It should be based on what's right for the city. No one should ever be afraid to work at the city based on their views.
What is the kind of supposed culture of fear in Vancouver City Hall that he's going to sort of like wellness his way out of?
I think what he's talking about is that if you want to work for the city and you believe, for instance, that homeless people should be rounded up in a giant butterfly net and thrown into a giant Vitamix and turned into fertilizer, that you shouldn't be afraid that people will get mad at you for that.
Oh, okay. That too can be radical candor as well.
Yeah.
Know? Like you can have those kind of like open, honest conversations about what flavor of mulch you think homeless people should be turned into, you know?
Yeah. I also got to mention that Landmark has been sued by Scientology several times because Scientology considers it a squirrel, which is like their word.
Getting sued for Scientology by Scientology for biting Scientology. Yeah,
yes, they consider it a stolen tech, and there are a bunch of different organizations. Landmark being the key one in the 2000s. They were really going after Landmark. So
fantastic. Yeah, okay. Just like what your actual cult being like. Actually, I think your song sounds a lot like the chords in my song.
Exactly.
So Ken gets into politics in 2018 and he joins a party called the Nonpartisan Association. Now, here's
this
the thing.
It's really, Maddie, really, really embarrassing. It's like we got Tom Cruise on this side and then and you're sort of like, is Pepsi okay? You've got Ken Sim and the Lululemon guy.
And Gary Tan.
It's like if you're going to be a cult slave for somebody, being Tom Cruise's slave is at least it's Tom Cruise, right? Like he's in movies and stuff. If you're working sort of like 20-hour days, like scrubbing boots or whatever for the Lululemon guy, that's a separate degradation on top of the slavery.
Yeah, like if I'm Tom Cruise's slave, I'm in an airplane hangar, and some days I get to see an airplane take off, and that's pretty cool. If I'm a slave to the Lululemon guy, what, I'm seeing someone fold some pants? Like, what's the point of it?
Plus, like, every time Tom Cruise does a Mission Impossible movie, there's a chance that your owner might die. Which is, so like, you're like kind of on tenterhooks for that, because what if he falls off the fucking plane? And then every time he doesn't, you get a little kind of like boost of reassurance that maybe he actually is just a kind of like ascended thetan or whatever, and he is better than you.
And the plane goes up and you look at the exit of the airplane hangar that you have to scrub boots in. And you realize you could leave, but what's that in the way?
the widest card. This was L. Ron Hubbard's card table.
It's bowing in the middle because it's so long.
The scene from The Master where he goes to confront Philip Seymour Hoffman in England, and he's just got the like very ornate English card table set up in front of the door.
Are you an animal, Freddy? Are you an animal?
While he sings in the hole of Slow Boat to China. It's a good movie. It's a good movie.
I want to fold you on a slow boat to China. Yeah.
So Ken Sim joins his first political party in 2018, the Nonpartisan Association. Now, Maddie, in November, I want you to guess for me.
Okay.
When was the Nonpartisan Association founded?
He ran on it in 2022, you said?
That's an interesting probably. Well, you've just told me. I was going to go in a different direction and say like 18.
He joined it in 2018. When was it founded?
I would say it was founded in 1867 when Gassy Jack Deaton, a Yorkshire seaman, steamboat captain and barkeep, arrived to open the first saloon in Vancouver.
Oh, Gassy Jack.
Okay, so
you're a mean one, Gassy Jack.
Whenever I hear something like the Nonpartisan Association, I always think, oh, a political party that was invented in 2012.
Yeah.
You know, by local businessmen in order to try to run the city like a business.
I'm closer to being right, aren't I? It was the steamboat man.
Yeah.
It is the major. It was for like a century the major local political force in Vancouver. It was started in 1937.
The Vancouver Machine?
That's right.
The Vancouver Machine is a nonpartisan association of like businessmen who think that they know best.
It was founded to challenge the Democratic Socialist Cooperative Commonwealth Federation.
I know we live on top of the ruins of like every socialist project, but Jesus Christ.
I can't believe that sounds so partisan to me.
No, it's nonpartisan.
It's right there in the name. Nonpartisan.
One of these guys is like Catholic, so it's nonpartisan.
In March 2018, right, Sim gets a call from Greg Baker, who's the president of the NPA at the time, a high school acquaintance, but like on behalf of Chip Wilson, who basically runs the thing. And he says, "I hadn't spoken to Greg in maybe 30 years, so I guess he was calling about one thing." The Wilson said in Vancouver Magazine of his pet mayor, quote, "We should be so thankful to get somebody that's run a profitable business and understands organizational structures. To have someone like Ken, who has all that, knows how to motivate people, is a dream come true." So he said,
"Yeah, you should see us like welding people into oil drums technique." So, it's crazy.
Sim, Sim said, "This is deeply personal. I'm not a career politician. I'm just a concerned resident who believes that Vancouver has a brighter future ahead for all of us."
Why does everything he says make me feel like I am a cow being led up a ramp into a slaughterhouse? Why is this motherfucker's dialogue written by Temple Grandin? I feel like I'm being put at my ease. Like I'm concerned by this.
Yeah, just look right here while I put this cylinder against your forehead. It's not a big deal. It'll be fine.
Never mind the bolt gun.
Look right here while I put this very relaxing cylinder against your forehead. it's going to help you. It cures headaches.
Yeah, it feels quite cool, doesn't it? Wouldn't you say?
You'll find escape is quite impossible as I block the exits with several card tables.
So Sim is the father of four boys, and he says, "Look, my children don't see a future for themselves in Vancouver." So when he announces the candidacy, he then said, "I was born and raised here, and those that know me know I've always been deeply passionate about this city, its residents, and the issues that impact us."
His four boys, I'm presuming here, don't see a future for themselves in Vancouver, in his telling, not because of the walking fees or the kind of air breathing fees, but because they might see a homeless guy.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. By the way, when he does become mayor, he says, "Now my boys do see a future for themselves in Vancouver." This is when he announces that he wants to get Vancouver into Bitcoin.
Yeah,
in 2024.
I mean, so far so Californian, in the sense that this has a kind of shared West Coast thing of like, we're going to use very kind of like reassuring language, and then also sort of like text the police chief in a way that is later subpoenaed to be like, "Hey, I saw a homeless guy from the window of this restaurant. Please kill."
Yeah.
This is exactly correct. This is like a West. I think that it's like, I always say that North America culturally goes in vertical slices rather than to so much like between the US and Canada, or at least like it had for a long time that sort
there
of changed.
Is, there
it
is
now.
Definitely, it strikes me, a shared kind of BC California commonality there.
100%. And because when his four boys do say that they finally can imagine a future in Vancouver, they all want to get into decentralized finance.
This being Canada, this was, of course, called something like the Four Boys Scandal. And like every newspaper has a headline that's like, "Interview with the Four Boys," and it's capitalized like you're supposed to know who this is. And this isn't a silly thing to say.
Two Michaels, four
yeah,
boys.
Yeah, there we go.
I was going to say, they're all named Michael.
Yeah,
these are the four Michaels, not to be confused with the brave two Michaels.
Our beautiful two
Vancouver
Michaels.
Vancouver has doubled the Michael budget.
Did the Michaels ever get returned?
Yeah, the Michaels are back. Yeah,
okay, the Michaels. Okay, I don't want to derail us completely. I was just curious why I had you guys on the line here.
Natty, would you believe that? So the Michaels turned on each other in court, and one of the Michaels,
Michaels broke up.
Well, yeah, one of the Michaels was like, "Actually, this guy is a fucking spy, and he recruited me." So they turned on each other in court, and then the one who got accused of being the spy master, who worked for General Affairs Canada, now has a job. Being like, "China is dangerous and I would know because they put me in jail, but not for spying."
I would know. I'm one of the Michaels.
Yeah, a nation lends its thanks to at least one Michael, probably the Michael who works for the Michael Institute, which is a think tank that exists to warn you about China and is definitely not a kind of jobs program for a former CSIS guy.
Yeah. A jobs program for Michaels.
Yeah.
The Michaels divided against themselves cannot stand.
It turned brother against brother, Michael against Michael.
four boys, all alike in dignity.
Sorry.
Documentary banjo over the like, "Dearest Martha, the weather here is intolerable, and we have been engaged in trench combat with my fellow Michaels."
Okay, I'm placing a card table between us and the Michaels bit. I'm sorry.
We gotta move on. So, Sim positioned himself as fiscally responsible but socially progressive, arguing, quote, "City Hall is being run based on ideology, and that's not right." He then said immediately, "I will be the most business-friendly mayor Vancouver has ever
bright
seen.
Bright primary colors, but in a soft way. Lots of curved walls so you can't see around, like, harsh corners." You know, like, I feel good about this guy, and I believe him that he's going to be socially liberal in a way that I care about.
Yeah.
So he lost by 900 votes in 2018. And he says, "I didn't lose. I learned." And that's a big distinction. You lose if you quit, and I don't quit. Also, the funny thing is,
that's epic.
All right, I know exactly the kind of guy he is after saying, "I didn't lose. I learned."
He's a stupid. Yeah. He's a classic stupid.
He's a classic stupid.
So after the election loss, the NPA goes kind of crazy because the rebel media does entryism on it. So basically, like, the Vancouver version of the Conservative Party gets taken over by Ezra Levant, essentially. Mm-hmm. And then Ken leaves because the NPA is taken over by, like, a local Trans. Political party whose primary concern is, like, transphobia.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And immigrants.
Yeah. Exactly.
Very original guys. Yeah. All right.
Ken Sim, less transphobic than expected, but perhaps only in the sense that trans women are easier to get into cults.
Yeah. So I think he basically leaves the NPA just because he's set up to be the golden boy of a different kind of political tendency. Like, all of his wealthy backers still like the NPA. It's just that's not how he markets himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is from a Global Mail article from the time. In a board election 2 weeks ago, several people with apparent conservative partisan backgrounds were elected directors of the NPA, including one who worked until 2017 with Rebel Media.
And they're going to have to call it the PA at this point.
The president of the BC Conservative Party, which is to the right of the Federal Conservative Party, and two who are linked to socially conservative movements that oppose sexual orientation and gender-inclusive policies that have become hot-button topics for BC school boards. So they've gotten consumed by, like, culture war stuff.
Yeah.
Mm. And the NPA is now, like, eating itself from within. It still is.
And let's just say that also the reason that people in British, boomers in British Columbia got consumed by the culture war is because the same organizations that are backing the BC Conservative Party are also backing op-ed columnists who are publishing, hey, have you guys heard about these bathroom sickos for years? They really, like, set the stage for it, you know? It's like a totally manufactured panic.
There's only one British Columbia opinion columnist I want to hear from, and that's the man who decides what's a beef and what's a bouquet.
Oh, yeah, Nanaimo News, what? Baby.
Sorry?
I can explain this quickly, but so there is a town on Vancouver Island called Nanaimo that is basically like a tiny microcosm of all of the political tensions and social problems and material problems that happen in Vancouver, including a massively outsized unhoused population and a real estate bubble. And there's that newspaper publishes something called Beefs and Bouquets, which boomers love to write into. So if you want to give somebody a bouquet, you could be like, bouquet to the officer who came and clubbed the vagrant who was on my lawn. And you can send a beef to, like, the mayor being like, it's bad that you're allowing the one world government into Nanaimo and you should be killed with an assault rifle.
Oh, okay.
It's sure. It's the Ken Brockman cheers and jeers.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, but in a much, much stranger vernacular.
Yeah.
Yeah. The opposite of a bouquet of flowers, of course, is a beef.
A beef.
A big side of beef. Yeah.
A side of beef.
Yeah.
So after stepping away from the NPA, Sim creates a party called A Better City Vancouver and brings them three current city councillors, one of whom is called Rebecca Bly, who is a fellow Landmark Forum person. So the party positions itself as a modern inclusive party with supporters from across the political spectrum. He runs against this guy, Kennedy Stewart, a liberal technocrat who's overseeing multiple overlapping crises and finds himself unable to deal with them.
I'm seeing crazy. Double here, two liberal technocrats.
Yeah.
This is, you know what this is? This is like, what if Andrew Yang actually managed to get elected?
Holy shit.
Yeah, kind of.
Right?
Oh, you're kind of, like, right, dude.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
So how does he get elected? It tells a story of an embattled police department that's been completely defunded, beset on all sides by dangerous homeless.
Every day, a VPD officer is hit with a mortar round fired by a homeless person and killed.
I'm going to jump in here and just give a little background on the VPD very quickly. So this is the same police force that during the late 1990s, when I lived in Vancouver, stymied an RCMP investigation into the largest mass murder of mostly Indigenous women in Canada's history, not done by the government. So, so like the VPD basically...
How bad do you have to be into murdering Indigenous women to be too into murdering Indigenous women for the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, one of the biggest enthusiasts of that activity in Canadian history?
That's what I'm saying, November. And the VPD actively tried to destroy a lot of their evidence that they had gathered and just, like, stymie the Fed from coming in. So that's the VPD.
This is, I'm getting the sort of sense there of, like, you know, when the British Army sent like officers to help the like white Russian like anti-Soviet forces in the Russian Civil War, and they went, hey, these guys are too anti-Semitic for us.
Yes.
So the campaign focuses particularly on random stranger attacks, right? Where it's like Sims, like you could be attacked by any random stranger if you're walking around anywhere in Vancouver. It's the most dangerous place in the world. It's
a healthy way to think about life and to go through stuff. Yeah, sure.
And his signature campaign promise was 100/100, which was 100 new police officers and 100 mental health nurses.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so it's balanced. You know, it's neither left nor right.
The mental health nurses are for the police officers to. Yeah.
So 104 officers are hired. These are mostly positions vacant from previous years. 10 nurses were hired. And they weren't even nurses. They were just like mental health professionals.
Well, think about this. There's a lot of cop movies. People want to like drive the fast car with the lights and the sirens and stuff. People don't want to be nurses because this is not as fun.
Chip Wilson actually funds a cop movie, a documentary called Vancouver is Dying, that basically says that the policy is to like not have drug users kill themselves with like safe supply and stuff is creating rampant violence that a defunded police department is unable to combat. And by the way, just so you know how in the pocket of Chip Wilson Ken Sim is, Ken Sim declared October 3rd, 2024 as Chip Wilson Day in Vancouver.
Hey, everybody. Today is Ask Chip Wilson why he named his company that day.
Yeah,
we've created a special holiday for the master.
walking down the hill from Dracula's castle and addressing all the peasants like, guys, you're never going to believe what holiday this is.
I think it's really funny. I'm now picturing him in my head because I don't think of this guy based on the kind of West Coast culture and the kind of technocracy thing as being like a suit and tie kind of mayor, but it's more
like a vest
or like open like collared shirt. Kind of map.
Patagonia.
Yeah, but what I'm now picturing with that is a pair of like pleated dress yoga pants.
he's in a formal Lululemon uniform. It's got epaulets.
He's wearing the pleated yoga pants and you know the like orthopedic Oxfords that Biden used to wear with the sneaker sole?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And that's how everyone in business is gonna dress in like 2050. Yeah. It's gonna be terrible. It's gonna make you wanna kill yourself.
He's got a blazer made of yoga pant material with epaulets. He's wearing a little hat.
It's the Lululemon Praetorian Guard outfit, and you can't and you can't buy it online.
Yeah. So when he's elected mayor, he immediately starts again, like doing all the things that you would expect him to do. He tries to slash spending. He tries to like take away like grants from like the Vancouver mm-hmm. area network of drug users.
Like a business.
He like closes safe supply. He promises never to raise taxes and raises property taxes every year.
Turning homeless guy into mailbox shit. Yeah, sure.
Exactly.
But also he does a lot of weird stuff because he's so landmark forum brained. Like he'd be getting interviewed by a journalist and he would just like get changed in front of the journalist who's interviewing
him. He's got to get out of his like sort of number one Lululemon uniform and into his number two Lululemon uniform.
Well, he's got to get out from his dress Lululemon blues into his mess wear. Yes. So he famously converted the conference room in City Hall into a personal gym.
Yeah, I believe when we started the podcast, we received 45,000 emails a day being like, did you know Ken Sim turned the part of City Hall into a gym? In an email to us like every day for months. So now we've addressed that.
So Green Party councillor Pete Fry happened to peek into the room, this is a quote from press, had previously been used for meeting delegations to City Hall and found it had been converted into a gym with a Peloton and a weight bench.
Weird. I think he was like trying to weld himself inside an oil drum in there.
he was getting into an oil drum and he placed a card table on top of it.
That's Houdini. That's landmark Houdini. How will I get out of this one?
Just like I could get out of the oil drum, but like it's going to push the card table off. It's going to make a noise.
So the previous room is part of what's known as the mayor's suite, according to this statement, and it was turned into a gym with equipment that Sim says he purchased with his own money.
It's part of the mayor's quarters, and as by virtue of his rank, he's entitled to have a kind of Lululemon Sea Org with a bunch of like naval sort of inflected uniforms and a bunch of sort of like he's actually allowed to have kind of cult slaves.
It's in the charter by the steamship guy.
He says, health and well-being are crucial, and this setup allows me to stay focused and energized against a demanding schedule. He is a stupid.
getting a kind of like the Vancouver Museum and Archives mixes up an original letter by Gassy Steamboat Guy and like one of the Zodiac letters from Zodiac that they had for some reason, and the founding charter of Vancouver just becomes about acquiring slaves to serve you in the afterlife.
Correct.
Yeah. People don't know this, but every West Coast city has a Zodiac.
Yeah. The Stephen Fincher Vancouver Zodiac movie is a very different time, but it's not necessarily a worse one.
Yeah, I'm Seattle Zodiac. I'm a little bit more laid back.
Chill Zodiac.
Yeah, I'm the Portland Zodiac, and I'm actually like a stripper on the weekend.
I don't like that the Portland Zodiac was played by Fred Armisen. I don't think that was appropriate.
The San Diego Zodiac movie has a lot of Blink-182 on the soundtrack, and I don't love it.
I'm the Orange County Zodiac. No, I'm the Orange County Zodiac.
When you say every West Coast city, does Ensenada have a Zodiac? I actually don't answer that. Yes, yeah. It does.
Wait, wouldn't that mean that like Anchorage has a Zodiac and it's Sarah Palin?
It's an elected position.
Anchorage did have a Zodiac, and it was that guy who, like the RCMP, loved murdering Indigenous women. Yes. So, yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, wow. I thought I was going to say something fun that was a callback to the mattress episode. Turns out I wasn't.
No, sorry. Nope. Sorry. No, same with the Ensenada one. Realizing you know too much about like murders, you know?
Yeah. So anyway, the other thing is that's a stupid opinion to be like having a gym in my office. Is you know what else? It was funny. It was reported in the news when he was finally forced to close his office gym. Mayor ends controversial health initiative.
I mean, the health initiative was his health.
Yes.
But you can't say that's not a health initiative.
I didn't say mayor's health initiative. I said mayor's health initiative.
The mayoral test on physical fitness.
That's because he was losing ranking on the big board that Chip Wilson has in his fucking castle. It's like, I gotta get my fucking BMI down for the master. Otherwise, he's going to put me in the pit.
The Renfield board.
Yeah.
All my Renfields.
He is a classic stupid. Like, he has a countdown clock that tracks hours, days,
like from
minutes,
the game show?
And seconds until the next election. So it's like 717 days, 10 hours, 35 minutes, and 38 seconds. I have that for two reasons. One, that bookmarks the date of the election.
Okay.
And second reason?
Second reason, we're running at 100 miles an hour, and there are a lot of politicians who believe you need to slow down and save stuff for the future. We're not doing that. Because, like, yeah, a lot of politicians, they're like, I'll never govern. Whereas we're governing.
That clock is connected directly to his central nervous system via like tiny monofilament wires. And if he loses the election, Chip Wilson's going to press a big button that disintegrates him.
Yeah, he's doing neuromancer shit. Yeah. Absolutely.
So he's also deeply evil, of course.
No, what? This guy?
So the moment they got in.
He seemed fine until just now.
They eliminated the city's renter's office. They abandoned Vancouver's living wage certification as an employer.
Yes.
He takes, like I mentioned, he takes away like arts grants, like art therapy for drug users and stuff, takes that away and says, it's a privilege, not a right, to be able to do business with the city of Vancouver. And that's the type of culture we want to lead here while I'm in office.
This is so Gavin Newsom again. Yes. It's so Californian. It's so West Coast. It's so how much teeth grinding ostensible wokeness can I bolster this sort of like raid on everything that makes my city livable with?
Oh, there's more.
Wait till you hear what I have to say next, November.
Oh, is it about the wokeness? Is it about my wokeness?
Hold on to something. Genuinely hold on to something. Okay. In fact, all of you listening, grab on to something sturdy.
Yeah, brace positions.
Okay, I'm putting my head between
so
my legs.
So this is when he's justifying clearing hundreds, thousands of people out of an encampment in East Hastings.
Uh-huh.
Things have reached a turning point in the encampment zone. Every day, city officials are hearing new and sometimes horrific stories regarding theft, vandalism, and violence against women, many of them BIPOC.
You sick motherfucker! Okay, right.
Sorry, I'm buying a gun and renting a car.
Uh-huh. I mean, listen, I've been building this one up through the, you know, sort of disgust for VPD and also disgust for this guy over lesser stuff. But like, this is your kind of like best option as far as technocracy goes is guy who is going to cynically leverage any identity he can find into legitimizing, like bulldozing a homeless encampment.
Yeah.
Hey, just a quick question.
Yep.
Does anyone have any data about like vulnerability of women and girls, some of them BIPOC, to becoming unhoused?
Oh, thank you for asking, November. Yeah, an unhoused person is a middle-aged white man with a beard who either has a top hat with the top popped off and tells charming stories, which is the good kind of homeless person who travels through town and then leaves.
Sure. You're hobo, if you will.
Sort of a 19th century crusty.
Yeah. Then the other type of homeless person is also a middle-aged white man, but who has a beard, carries a weapon, and is sort of ranting and raving at you and will attack you as a random stranger.
I'm sick of being abused and victimized and oppressed by these homeless people who have had it too good for too long, you know?
Yeah, what I hate is when I see one of the violent, bad kind of homeless people on the street and the cops roll by and he puts a barrel on over what he's wearing already to trick the cops into thinking that he's a friendly, like, fun kind.
Yeah, you know? Sometimes they'll have, like, a ukulele or a banjo or a guitar with them because, you know, you've got your singing hobo and then you've got your stabbing hobo.
You ever see a hobo with a corg? The other thing that strikes me is if I'm being sort of like abused for my BIPOCness or whatever, or like abused as a woman and girls by a homeless person, what I want then is to obviously have that person sort of like beaten and tortured in some way. But ideally, I want that done by a very like woke institution that's going to respect my pronouns and my identity and all of that, which is why I put that trust in the Vancouver Police Department.
Mm-hmm. I just got to add, November, would you believe that in Nanaimo, the small town that has all the problems of Vancouver, one of the key reasons that the city did not provide temporary shelters after they bulldozed the homeless community was they were like, we got to look out for the women and the girls.
Protecting women and girls is so important.
We got to protect the women and the girls. So we cannot build temporary shelters because we have no way of separating these two groups out from each other. So we're just going to let them sleep on the street and get arrested.
Yeah. Well, because that's, you know, then the police can protect the women and girls.
Mm.
They love doing that.
They love to do it.
I guess if you can't do any of that, I suppose one of the better things to do would be to build lots of supportive housing so that people can at least go live in it. But of the hundreds of people that were cleared away, only 18 were given supportive housing.
Well, I mean, those were the 18 who passed the kind of basic level of wokeness test.
Yeah, those are the 18 like singing ones.
Yeah.
But then immediately after, the ABC banned the construction of new supportive housing in Vancouver.
The wokeness test that you've got to do to get into supported housing. It's like, guess my pronouns. And it's kind of a Kobayashi Maru, right? Because like, if you get them wrong, then you fail. But like, obviously, if you get them right, you've also just assumed them. So really, we can kind of get you coming and going on that.
Yeah, you need to be like a Zen master where you have to just like absorb and reflect the question.
Yeah, you have to accept not knowing, but also not do that in a way that's disrespectful. And that's when I start throwing out the Polaroids and the what ethnicity is this person questions.
That's when I get the calipers out.
You start fossying the Polaroids at them like fucking ninja stars. So Chip Wilson commented on the clearances because he owns a company called Low Tide Properties.
2,000-word essay on whether or not there should be a mixed dress-up.
So he argues that, quote, the move to clean up the east side has been Sims' best so far. I think the issue is that there's too many people who are making salaries running charities dependent on the east side staying exactly how it is. Sim echoed this language. For too long, he said, multiple levels of government have enabled and encouraged the concentration of supportive housing, shelter spaces, and dozens of social service nonprofit organizations in this neighborhood.
It's all this bootstrapped, like, learned helplessness shit that we know.
It goes back to fucking Landmark. This makes me so fucking crazy. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I grew up there, and they've been trying to hone this fucking bullshit philosophy for as long as I've been alive, and Sim has somehow managed to do it with the help of Landmark, which is that there's like a homelessness industrial complex that is somehow propped up.
Big hobo. I mean, the thing is, right, like I know that like the thing doesn't stand up by its own logic as kind of like card table stakes at this point, but like, if you're supposed to be a technocracy guy, if you're supposed to be a technocrat, if you're supposed to be a data guy, does none of the kind of like decades of data showing that your shit of like, you know, self-reliance, whatever, does not work, and Big Hobo, the hobo industrial complex, does, Is that just all Big Hobo's numbers to you, or like does that just not matter?
Well, what Sim says is he says the poverty industrial complex has not only blocked local businesses from thriving, but has also created conditions that degrade the health and well-being of our most vulnerable community members.
Oh.
Then, a confidential memo was leaked regarding Sim's plan for invigorating the downtown East Side, which included a reunification roundtable with First Nations and other Indigenous groups to relocate them from the downtown East Side to their home communities.
Where are those home communities? That's the other thing. It's just like the province has allowed smaller towns in British Columbia to just wither and die. Like basically after the privatization of the logging industry, a lot of towns like my hometown, there's nowhere for people to go back to. There's no services. There's nothing. So I have to go to the big city. You know?
Well, exactly. If you're like a kind of internal refugee from settler colonialism, right? If you're like, if you came to sort of like the worst part of Vancouver to be homeless and sort of like live this kind of miserable existence, being sort of like having the shit kicked out of you by the cops and the mayor all the time, how much worse was it where you came from that you chose that, you know?
Sorry, there's deep precedent in Canada for this too, which is just basically, you know, like taking the Inuit population who are traditionally like hunter-gatherer nomadic, that go where the animals are, and being like, hey, you're going to live in the northernmost part of Canada and you're going to stay there. You're not going to move around. Here's a bunch of rifles. Good luck. You know, it's the same thing.
After all this, the next thing Ken Sim does in public is he gets up on stage at the Catalano Street party, shotguns a beer, and then says this shows how much he wanted Vancouver to be a city with swag.
I hate this guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. For real, like straight up. It's getting harder for me to do jokes about him because I hate him that much.
Yeah, he's going to get a big excavator and he's going to steal some of the swag emeralds from under Manhattan and he's going to start putting them under Vancouver.
You know where those swag emeralds are as Penticton.
That's right.
Oh, totally.
He'll have to battle two Greek brothers for them.
Two Greek brothers and then their Greek mom.
Yeah.
So he also, and their nephews.
Malawaka.
So he also, he completely eliminated this Vancouver Parks Board, which is one of these things that prevents like overconstruction and green spaces and stuff, which was considered just a total coup d'etat by like Chip Wilson's real estate company.
It's like
essentially
YIMBY shit, but like more directly like development corruption.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
By 2024, you know, Vancouverites really don't like him and he ends up at the last refuge of the scoundrel, which is Bitcoin. He passes a motion directing staff to convert the city's financial reserves into Bitcoin, to accept to accept cryptocurrency for payments. He
like,
starts going
because like all of them would be like too obviously financially suicidal to be like, oh yeah, the city of Vancouver needs a bailout from the provincial and federal government because it got wiped out when Valve changed the economy on Counter-Strike skins.
Correct.
So he also starts going on podcasts where he goes on a cryptocurrency talk show called Coin Stories. Saying,
Ken Sim, come on the show. I want to yell at you for about an hour.
It would be irresponsible for the city of Vancouver to not look at the merits of adding Bitcoin to the city's strategic reserves. He explains the motivation was personal. Like I said earlier, from a purely selfish perspective, I want my boys to continue to live here because two of my sons are interested in pursuing careers in cryptocurrency.
I don't give a fuck about you or your boys.
Your awful
fuck
boys.
Fuck you and your stupid boys.
So, but it's happening now, by way of concluding, is that ABC Vancouver's like unprecedented clean sweep in 2022 has steadily been eroded. He's lost six councillors. He's lost six councillors to defections. He's lost a bunch of by-elections.
Yeah, he lost Katie Bly, didn't he? He lost that one lesbian landmark.
Rebecca Bly. Yes, he did. He lost her. When he decided to not construct any new supportive housing in Vancouver, that was too far for Rebecca Bly, who said, hey, I don't agree. And so then the ABC released a statement saying, time and again, Councillor Bly has shown she's not a core fit with the ABC Vancouver. Rather than working to find common ground and advanced solutions,
she's a suppressive person.
She's chosen to put her own views ahead of the collective work of the team. And so now Rebecca Bly is running against Ken Sim to be mayor as part of a party, I believe, called Vancouver Votes or something like
that. Alien
this.
Versus fucking Predator. Fuck off.
The most generic names. Like, yeah, it's the election is happening party. Vancouver Votes. Yeah, I sure hope it does.
Yeah.
So I'm going to check what it is now. Vote Vancouver. That's what it's called.
That's the same. Yeah,
it's the same.
That's exactly
They're actually,
the same.
She's actually running against the Vancouver Votes party.
So Ken Sim, by way of wrapping up, Ken Sim said, you know, there may have been some micro mistakes along the way.
Don't you mean micro learnings?
But I think the big one is that we did not communicate the need for property tax increases effectively. However, in an interview a few days before the recording of this episode, he did say that as a result of his term, Vancouver's, quote, swagger factor has gone up over the last 3 years with more activity and vibrancy in the city.
All right.
Is it swaggy to effectively run a bunch of homeless people out of town?
They're not running them out of town. Let me talk about this new swag a little bit here. This is really like the terminus of Sims' tenure as mayor, is that all of these forces combined have somehow managed to convince the British Columbia NDP party to get on board with a conservative idea that was floated by Gary Tan, the Y Combinator San Francisco guy, who's got deep ties to Vancouver. And British Columbia is now going to force severely addicted and mentally ill people into what they call involuntary care, which means trying to open up decommissioned mental hospitals. And if they pick you up on the street, basically tying you to a bed. So that's where we're at.
going to the fucking Ken Sim gulag because your top hat was not sort of jaunty enough.
Yeah, exactly. Honestly, like, the thing about British Columbia is that British Columbia is a dark and evil place.
Amen, brother.
So I'm learning. Yeah, I mean, I know a bit about kind of American settler colonialism, but like really, in Canada, it feels like weirdly in some ways closer to the surface, and I'm not sure how to account for that.
Oh, it absolutely is.
100% less people.
It is, and yeah, we've tricked ourselves into thinking that we're better. Anyway, look.
You tricked many Americans into thinking you're better.
Yeah.
So, look, here's the thing. Ken Sim, I hope you lose. I hope Vote Vancouver secures all 19 council seats that once belonged to ABC. But this was my mayor. Thank you very much, Dan, for helping me bring that a little bit of those Vancouver vibes to the pod.
Thank you, Dan. Yeah,
no problem.
Thank you, Dan.
No problem.
Anything you'd like to plug, Dan?
Well, I can plug a couple of things. First thing, I would plug Sean Orr, a Canadian politician who got elected to city council. He's part of a left-wing coalition of progressive electors. And Sean, I don't want to say Wolf Parade playing in Vancouver helped him get elected, but he did open for us. So, you know. So support Sean if you live in the Vancouver. So
would you say he's your Renfield?
I would say I wouldn't say he's Renfield, but I've got a picture of him on a board and it's got a number on it, you know, and I'm Sean.
And he knows what the number is.
If you're listening to this, Sean, I'm watching you. I am. And you're doing a good job so far. Also, I guess, what else can I plug? I have a Patreon where I put songs up and videos explaining albums that I've made and occasionally watch horror movies. So if you want to help me out, go over there and subscribe.
Beautiful. I'll link it in the show notes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well,
this was a free episode, by the way.
This was a free episode. Mm-hmm. So check out our Patreon for another mayor.
Yeah.
Who's mayor next week?
Whose turn is it?
November Kelly's.
I have an answer for you. I have a beautiful, beautiful answer for you. So my mayor is going to be, I'm staying on the West Coast, Hiram Gill, mayor of Seattle, Washington.
Ooh.
So we're finally going to find out about the Seattle Zodiac.
Oh, this is, you know, I've got a book about early Seattle that I should read to bone up. It's called Perfect. The Sons of the Prophets. That's very...
Yeah, let's go. Staying with my kind of old-timey Western nonsense.
Hell, yes.
All right. Well, check that out on the bonus feed next week. But until then, keep those sashes clean and stay municipal.
We're not doing that.
Are you trying that out, bud?
You apologize for that right now.
Hey, can you...
Okay.
Can you take that again with something better?
No, I really have to go. I have dinner in 3 minutes and I have a chat.
We're hurling card tables out of the way.
Okay. Well, until next time, Riley has dinner in 3 minutes.
Trap him in a riff right now, guys. Talk about the card.
Okay. Bye. No, don't. Hey, get that card table out of here. What are you doing?
Get that card table out of the mayor's office.
Bye.
Bye.
Mr. Gorbachev, remove this card table.
Fuck off.
Okay, bye. Wait, that was Kennedy Reagan said that. Bye. Bye.